Casey Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer, blah, blah, blah.
Daddy. And been gone,
but Jax is adorable. I just gave him kisses, and he's so cute.
He is the cutest human. So we don't remember how to do this show.
Yeah, but I didn't know ever in the beginning either. Oh. Like, we had done so many, so 100-something, but I never knew.
Okay, you know? So it'll be the same thing, and even Will is here with us.
Hey, hottie patati Will Schmidt, what's going on?
Howdy, how you guys doing?
Good. Awesome. Will is coming from you live in the Bay Area. Oh,
you
yeah.
You got to represent North Cal.
Yeah, okay. Baby. Is it raining up there, too?
It's sprinkling. It was raining overnight. And it's just, I like the overcast.
Me too. I like it.
So you guys might not know, because we're deceiving, we're tricky, we're in camouflage, but we have been gone for 2.5 months, probably.
Oh my gosh,
something like that.
Wow.
We just did a whole bunch of shows ahead of time so that I could disappear and go make another human being. So,
another human being?
No, just this one human being.
Okay, I was like, what's going on?
No,
wow.
No.
He is on the
simmer
fast
down.
Track to
no,
a
definitely
whole brood.
Not. Yeah. So we had a baby.
Uh-huh.
And he's small.
He's so
just like a person,
cute.
But he's smaller.
Oh my gosh, he's adorable.
Yeah. So now we're back and we're going to do this show, but we don't really remember how to do the show.
But you know what? It's kind of coming back a little bit. If you haven't liked us on Facebook, go to Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we post all the show topics that we'll be doing in future shows. And you guys can ask any questions or any topic you want us to cover, because this is our 122nd show. So we're running out of ideas.
Yeah. So we're done after this show, mm-hmm. I think. No, actually, we got a bunch of ideas in the last couple months. So we're kind of
cool.
Loaded with stuff. We're going to try and catch up with a lot of questions that people have asked. And today's show is, of course, you got
my
one from Rick.
My favorite topic.
It'll be Kenna's topic. So to help us get back into the flow of doing a show.
And the drunken reverie of summer.
Yeah. we're all drunk right now.
Yes.
We're going to do the show on alcohol while we're drunk to fully experience and to get a better understanding of alcohol.
Yeah, Nina just left.
Yeah,
I guess she's going to
drunk.
Get a drink.
Yeah,
yeah she's going to get a drink.
It's her turn to get around.
I had thought about having a few before I came in, but then I was like, I did a yoga thing, and that just after that, I was like, I don't feel the need now.
Speaking of drinking, are you lactating?
No,
because you have a big wet spot, right?
I ate and brushed my teeth before I came, and I got a big old thing of toothpaste. I'm still in my sweats, but I did take a shower before yoga, and it wasn't that intense, so
okay.
I don't smell.
Fantastic. So today's topic is one we got from Rick, from the group,
because
he comes up with a lot of great ideas. And when he sent this idea in, he also sent in about 17,000 questions about alcohol.
Which I don't have in front of me.
Yeah, boy. Okay, so with all of Rick's questions that he sent in, that Kenna now has in front of her because
yes.
I went and found them, I just scattered his questions throughout everybody else's questions so it wouldn't be, because this thing's long.
Overwhelming.
I think this might go to 2 episodes with this show. So we just put some of Rick's questions throughout there. But this is going to be a great topic that Kenna will be able to teach us a lot about.
Yeah, baby. I bet if you checked my blood alcohol level right now, I'd still be drunk from Sunday. Yeah.
Good okay. job. Good job.
Okay. So we're going to just dive right on in.
I guess we're going to do a show. Will, do you have any objections to doing a show?
No. Proceed.
Okay. Proceed.
All right. Here we go. Rick from the group. Show topic, alcohol. Please cover alcohol and what it does in and to the body and why we might want to avoid it. Note that I said might. Good one, Rick.
Good one, Rick. Good to put that disclaimer in there. So that's what we're going to kind of do. And, you know, we really want to talk about all the pros and cons of alcohol. And if you're excited to hear about all the benefits of alcohol.
Yeah, let's start with the pros for all this.
Yeah, just so that you know, if you're excited about that, you missed that part. We already covered that. I know we haven't started yet, but we have covered all of the benefits of alcohol.
You mean there's not one pro of alcohol?
No, we're going to we'll make up something, and it's going to work out.
Well, how about forgetting all your problems?
Right. See, that can be one of them. So we are going to talk about some possible benefits and some possible reasons to go ahead and have a drink from time to time. All those things, we'll get to that. But as far as true health benefits that people like to make up and market, we kind of covered them all already.
So like getting drunk, running around naked isn't, that's not a benefit? I mean, you're running.
Well, there's benefits to naked too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I just made a whole person who's really cute from those benefits. Okay, so let's go to Rick's first question then.
All right, Rick, how does it affect the liver?
Rick, it affects the liver.
By overwhelming it.
Yeah, so
you should try to dumb it down a little for the people, Tony.
Oh. Make it dumber than it affects the liver?
I don't know if you could get dumber than what you just said, but okay.
I could try. I'm drunk, so I certainly could slur it more or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what happens is alcohol, especially the ethanol that's in alcohol, which is what causes a lot of the effects of alcohol, is processed in the liver, a lot like fructose is. And that can be beneficial in a lot of ways, especially when we look at fructose. But the liver only has the ability to process so much stuff. So beyond that, it starts to beat up the liver a little bit. And that's why you hear so many alcohol-induced liver disease kind of, you know, topics that people cover. And oh, he drank until his liver was dead. And that's kind of why it's not only that. You know, the liver's job is to filter out anything that is synthetic or toxic or overwhelming to the body. Because of the type of sugars that make up some portions of alcohol, that ethanol gets processed right in the liver. So that's another job for the liver that has to do. So people usually don't drink a small amount. They usually, they're like upside down on a keg.
I don't think I've ever drank just one drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard of people doing that, but it just doesn't happen. So, Will, why don't we talk a little bit about how those types of sugars or alcohol would process through the liver and, you know, what kind of problems that could cause if there was an excess amount, more than what the liver could handle at that time?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting when you look at ethanol in context of carbohydrates and, as you just mentioned, sugars, and it's sort of similarity of, like, what problems can come from consuming any macromolecule that in excess of what you can process. So like even like a perfectly awesome healthy protein, like a collagen protein or egg protein, it can be problematic if you're having trouble processing it. So when we look at ethanol as a molecule that your liver has to process, the real problem comes from things that can get in the way of your liver's capacity to process that, and what I mean by process, by break down that molecule into other products of chemical reactions. So when we see, for example, sugar in the context of like a muscle cell or any tissue cell that is trying to metabolize glucose, a lot of the times the problem doesn't come from the sugar. It comes from an inability of the person's cells to be able to use that sugar. And so when we see, like, if you look at some of our the writings of Ray Pete, one of our favorite nutritionists, is cirrhosis of the liver does not occur in an individual who does not have unsaturated fats in their diet. So they find, like, it's the unsaturated or polyunsaturated fats that impair the liver's ability to process alcohol, and that causes cirrhosis.
Alcohol, say that again. All I need is saturated fats in the body.
Saturated fats protect the liver cirrhosis. Cirrhosis of the liver does not occur from alcohol alone. It comes from a combination of polyunsaturated fats and alcohol. And it's because the polyunsaturated fats are interfering with the liver's capacity to process the alcohol. Just like in a diabetic cells, when they're not able to process glucose, all this glucose builds up because they're not able to metabolize it. And things that get in the way of the processing of glucose are the real problem, Even if they cut out glucose, their body makes more and more glucose because the cells need that. Your cells don't need ethanol in the same way that they need glucose, but the issue is still the same of the capacity of the cell or the organ to process that molecule is what makes the difference between it being damaging or not.
Yeah, and a liver can, you know, it can store fuel in the form of glycogen as well in this processing situation, and it can also store some of glycogen in the tissues. But just like with carbs coming in or fructose coming in, ethanol coming in, if it's more than it can process, now it's going to become a problem. So not only do you have to look at the person's capacity to process that, like Will was just saying, but even if a person has the ability to process ethanol in an effective manner, when you dump a keg of ethanol in there, no liver is going to be able to process that. That doesn't mean that you're instantly going to create cirrhosis of the liver or some type of liver, fatty liver disease. These things happen over time. You can't look at a bottle of beer and be like, this is the beer that gave me cirrhosis. That's not how it works.
Yeah, because alcohol, we're not just talking about liver cirrhosis when we're talking about the effects of alcohol, but the as you just said, it's a cumulative impact of alcohol that's poorly processed over time by the liver that causes cirrhosis. But the other effects, like you could still totally kill yourself tonight with alcohol if you wanted to, if you drank enough, but it wouldn't be from liver cirrhosis. It would be from blood alcohol levels being too high and that interfering with your brain oxygen levels. And
right. Actually, Rick asked about some brain stuff, so we'll come back to that too, and let's dig deeper into that, because people die from drinking too much in one night, situation. So there's reasons that happens that we should cover a little bit. But one interesting thing about the liver that I had never gone into before was that the alcohol-damaged liver cells can allow excess ammonia to get into the brain. So even when you're just causing liver damage, like a lot of people think, you can actually be causing problems to the brain just from the liver's inability to do its job. Not only does filth accumulate when a liver is basically beaten to death, but other things like ammonia, which exist in the body, can become to a toxic level, and even toxic level in the brain, which can cause this hepatic encephalopathy kind of thing, where people, not only do they have sleep patterns that are jacked up and their mood is gone and psychiatric conditions, you know, anxiety, depression, but they can become like severe cognitive problems where a person not only can have memory loss, but they can be confused, like in a room, like, how do I exit this room?
Can you reverse this stuff? You know,
with most things with a liver, like there are organs, like, you know, some people say that when you jack up a thyroid, sometimes that has a lot of harder of a time coming back. But a liver can regenerate in a lot of ways if there's a lot of circumstances going right. You can't just decide to, you know, to heal your liver and everything's going to be fixed. But, you know, we've heard from people that have improved liver disease issues just by removing what's causing the problem would be one thing. But then also putting the body in a position where it has the ability to rebuild, not only the rebuilding state, but also the tools to rebuild, whether that means resources, vitamins. Is there other things that could block a liver from being able to, look at all, what are some of the other things that you could be doing that could screw up the liver's ability to regenerate correctly?
Sure. I mean, everything that your body needs to, for the cells to have the energy that they need to do, the energy that they need to perform the functions that they need to do, including regenerate themselves as well as just perform regular metabolic processes. One thing that's really interesting to look at, again, is how your body can resort to making alcohol itself when cellular energy production processes are impaired. And we can see this this ties into answering your question about what could get in the way of the liver regenerating itself. Is anything that's blocking cellular energy production. So when there's things that are damaging the mitochondria of the cells, they're not able to perform the regular cellular energy production cycle, which is called cellular respiration. So when we eat something like a carbohydrate, it breaks it down into a glucose molecule that then gets broken down into this other substrate where you split a glucose in half and it becomes pyruvate. And then from there, we're supposed to use oxygen to turn it and to enter the cellular, the Krebs cycle and the cellular respiration process. But if there's something getting in the way of our use of oxygen, like elevated estrogen, elevated cortisol, elevated tryptophan, polyunsaturated fats, lack of thyroid hormone,
overly alkaline bloodstream.
Yeah, any of those things that we talked about in that episode we had about cellular respiration, where that other episode where we had Benedict Lerica on, where we talked about thyroid function, any of those things that block this next step, where we've got that glucose broken down in pyruvate, it's about to get oxidized and create all this energy for us. But if there's something getting in the way of that step, it instead can get fermented, and it can turn into lactic acid and byproducts of elevated ammonia. And it can also, if there's other agents in there, it can get fermented. If there's bacteria or yeast in our intestinal tract, it can get fermented actually into ethanol. So sometimes you'll see blood alcohol levels of diabetics be high, and almost always you'll see extremely high ammonia levels, as you were just talking about, Tony. Like, those ammonia levels will build because that fermentation process is occurring.
Okay, so before we get too far from that, which will be easy for us to get far from that.
I think we already...
Yeah, but keep in mind what Will just talked about, those ways that a person could be creating more ethanol on their own. So we're going to come back to that when we talk about the alcohol's effects on one person as opposed to another.
Do you hear that noise? Is it Will, like, banging around, or...
Remember that you're drunk. So it could just be that.
I was going to ask about diabetics, because I have heard diabetics haven't drank at all, but that they have blood alcohol level because their body's making it and stuff.
Yeah, so. It's kind of a two-step thing. Like, when we ferment stuff, it's through a process.
Yeah, that's Will's mic. He's like kicking his mic or something, and then he makes a noise, and then everybody was like, is there a monster in the room?
You guys just, I don't know. You told me I had to be close to the mic, so I'm trying to like keep down. When we ferment stuff, like when our cells fail to perform cellular respiration, we make more lactic acid. But when we have certain like yeast populations in our gut, if things aren't moving through our gut in a timely manner, they will ferment things in a different way that creates ethanol. So that's possible. You can have that from like a flora imbalance, or if things aren't moving through your digestive system. Those yeast ferment things in a different way than our cells do. But they can be inside us creating ethanol. So that's kind of a way to have a free bar inside your body.
It's like free. Yeah.
It's cheap.
It's just to have a lot of havoc going on, and then you'll just be drunk all the time.
I'm not getting rid of the stomach virus. I'm just going to keep it.
All right, let's go on to the next question, since we just spent 20 minutes to cover one.
Laura from Los Angeles, is there a type of alcohol that is less bad for you?
Don't you want there to be?
Yes, like that. Vodka. You know, in Weight Watchers, they always say, drink vodka or a hard liquor, a white liquor, you know, and so you did, and it was only a couple points.
Right, good. So let's just go by the points.
Yeah.
So I think we have to look at this from two different aspects. I think we have to look at this one way from a weight loss aspect, since so many of our listeners come to us from the fat loss book and they want to know how to lose weight. And then the other aspect we have to look at it is just if you're not concerned about that. So the first one from the weight loss aspect, there are a lot of different alcohols that could have other possible benefits over other choices, you know, like a white alcohol, like maybe it just has less fuel in it, so to speak.
Well, they say a glass or two of wine a night. You know, you hear studies about that say
yeah,
that's good.
We're going to talk about that too. Right? So maybe people say that's beneficial, or maybe people say that if gluten is a problem from you, then certainly drinking some type of alcohol that did not contain all those gluten cofactors would be more beneficial for that person. But you still have to look at the actual alcohol, and the actual alcohol is what creates a lot of the problems. So you can't view it as less bad. It's still going to bring you beneficial results, especially if you're looking at weight loss. One of Rick's questions was, how does alcohol affect insulin levels? So why don't we cover that while we're talking about the weight loss effects of any type of alcohol? And then we'll talk about other good or bad alcohols too.
Yeah, I mean, so like you said, Tony, there's a lot of people that come to this conversation with the goal of like, what's going to make me the least fat when I go out to drink, you know? And just like with when we talk about carbohydrates in general, a lot of the alcohols that people will drink have sugar along with them. And sugar, you know, it's a different molecule. It's a different thing the body has to process. But some people are really, really not good at processing those sugars and to get them in a concentrated liquid form, like in a margarita or even in beer, you know, those higher amounts of that. And so those sugars are just like any other sugar that you're drinking that you should be kind of conscious of if you're trying to, you know, watch your active carb count. The other issue is the different kinds of ferments that can be present in things that, like tequila, like the processing for that, like there's all these other exotoxins in there that actually make tequila one of the only stimulatory alcohols. Like it stimulates your nervous system. There's so many different toxins in it that like freaks your body out into an excited state. It's kind of, you know, it's like I don't know the equivalent, but like if you were to take like mushrooms, like psychedelic mushrooms, like your nervous system can get kind of freaked out because it senses this invader, and there's that kind of like odd exotoxic impact on your nervous system that can also be present in certain alcohols that can kind of screw you up. And on the flip side, some alcohols were originally created as medicines, like Swedish bitter herbs. Those are an alcohol, and they have some very beneficial impact on like cleansing out the intestinal tract and killing off pathogenic bacteria from all the herbs that have been extracted in the alcohol. So you can look at your beverage of choice as like, what if you're gonna drink, what can you do to like have it be the least bad and also possibly have some benefits? So when I have alcohol, I'll usually choose one of the herbal liqueurs that has some sort of beneficial impact on my flora and my digestive system, and that is lower in like weird processed sugars and weird ferments.
Yeah, and a lot of people will find that, okay, I was drinking Jack and Coke, but maybe if I drink something else with just maybe carbonated water with a lime in it, then maybe that can be a little more beneficial as far as when I'm looking at the sugar type of insulin spike and sugar content that I'm sucking down. So you can view it that way when it comes time for you to drink. You just don't want to, and I see people do this so often, is that, I heard red wine is heart healthy, so I'll have that instead while I'm on this diet trying to lose weight. And you just have to be honest with yourself. It's not going to happen because of we know that liquid sugars affect insulin levels much harder than a candy bar might. But the other thing to view is that alcohol inhibits our inhibitory mechanism.
I like to have a candy bar with alcohol.
Right, and that's usually what happens. I don't know if Ken has ever experienced or seen anybody like this, but I've heard of people drinking, and then they might eat things that were not the best for them during that time. Isn't that weird?
That happens?
Yeah. That's a myth, Tony.
I know, it's an urban legend. But no, but when you drink, it's like you wake up and you're like, I ate a whole tube of cookie dough. Oh, and now I see that I didn't just eat it. I scooped it into a box of taco shells, and I was having cookie dough tacos at 3:30 in the morning.
So are you trying to pin alcohol as a gateway food?
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. So just, and I'm just talking about just in the regards to weight loss, I think that if we're going to pull a benefit of alcohol out of our back end, if we're going to make one up, it's really that it can be fun, it can make you feel good, it can be social. All those things, I think, have benefits in life. So if you want those benefits, then you go
more
ahead and you...
More.
I've got a real one, though.
Well, let me finish this thought first.
Yeah, sorry.
You know, just be honest about and informed about what you're doing. Don't look at red wine like it's a heart healthy thing, like you are benefiting yourself by
moderation.
Drinking that. Look at the red wine as, I'm enjoying myself with my friends, and there are benefits to that because, you know, stress is a super big deal. It's a really harmful thing. So if you do something that reduces stress, it can be beneficial, but there are other ways to reduce stress than dumping a bunch of sugar in your system. So I think that if you look at it that way, then you can find places in your life that alcohol could actually be beneficial or enjoyable, and things that are enjoyable can be beneficial. You just have to understand the other side of it so that you don't try to, what's it called?
Rationalize
what you're doing into thinking, oh, well, I'm benefiting
Favorite
myself.
Word.
Right, right. Yeah, that's Kenna's bumper sticker. Just says rationalize. Okay, so Will, let's come up with your other benefit.
Yeah,
that
I
was a real
it.
One though, Tony, and it's related to what mine was.
Okay.
I've mentioned before multiple episodes that I used to have this really intense circulation pain, like in all my extremities or my hands and feet and legs.
And when you got and
eventually
drunk, you couldn't
even my torso was like constantly contracting and burning and tingling. And doctors weren't sure what it was. They thought it was maybe MS, and I had these nerve tests done and spinal like MRIs and blood tests, and everything looked normal. So it was just getting worse and worse. To like, it was a 24-hour a day problem that was driving me insane. And then I was working in India, and I had this one vacation where I went to Thailand for like 3 weeks. And when I was there, I was like, I didn't have a gym, so I wasn't taking like my normal amount of like stimulants for working out. And instead, I was like going out and drinking like Sambuca, maybe every night. And I noticed that within like a day, my pain was gone. It was completely gone.
And you were drunk. So
yeah, it was drunk. but then even in the morning, like the next day, I would wake up. I was like so relaxed, and like for the first time in years, my hands and feet and legs didn't hurt or cramp. They just felt warm and good and relaxed. And it was like an all-day thing. It wasn't just while I was drunk. It was like it had shifted something. And then when I got back to my normal routine, the pain came back when I was drinking caffeine and working out again. And not just caffeine, but other things that like pre-workout stimulants that had a lot of nitric oxide inducers. But what I learned from – I posed that experience to a natural physician in Arizona once, and he was like, huh, well, alcohol is a vasodilator and these pre-workouts are vasoconstrictors, so those constrict your blood flow to your and prevent it from reaching your extremities, but alcohol does the opposite. It opens up your circulatory system. And so I realized like that for me, because I had pushed my body so far into like the sympathetic mode, the fight or flight nervous system pattern, that it was stuck there. It was stuck in the sympathetic imbalance. And alcohol helped push my nervous system in a fairly powerful way to the other direction, and blood flow returned.
Yeah, that's interesting, because while I was looking up stuff for this show, I found a lot of people that were saying how alcohol is very pro-sympathetic. So I wonder if it's a situation where a small amount would push you the other direction, but then if that amount became to an excessive level, all the bad things that can go on from that could create a stress that would push you too sympathetic. Because there are a lot of things like, you know, alcohol-induced hypertension and things like that. And there's a lot of other things that point to how alcohol is very pro-sympathetic. But maybe it's just a situation where it's only pro-sympathetic in the excessive amount level kind of state.
Yeah, it could be amount. It could be the individual, how that's like the cause of the individual's hypertension.
Sure.
Like for me, it wasn't high blood sugar, where maybe for a lot of people, they're already kind of like high blood pressure because of elevated blood sugar. And then you add, you know, alcohol in there, and that contributes more to the density of the blood. But for me, the hypertension was coming from direct stimulation of my nervous system through stimulants, not from
workout stimulants.
Yeah, exactly. So instead, alcohol had a direct impact on my autonomic nervous system, but I didn't necessarily have any issues with blood sugar handling. So,
right, exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of hypertension is like that, but I was looking at things because it was interesting to me that, you know, a lot of people that die from alcohol poisoning die from other aspects that we'll talk about in a second, but some actually reduce their gag reflex so much that they regurgitate and suffocate on their own vomit kind of thing. So it got me to thinking that, wow, it turns off the gag reflex so much. Is this a very pro-sympathetic situation? And when I looked up a bunch of studies, I found a bunch that kind of agreed with that. But I wonder, again, that sounds more like something that would be in a severe, you know, we know that we get more sympathetic in an emergency state. And after you suck down a whole keg, your body's in an emergency state.
Mm-hmm. It could be that, and the lack of gag reflex could also be because of how ethanol interferes with neurotransmitters. It right. could just be not
that signal's not making it.
Yeah, it could be directly inhibiting that signal pathway, but not necessarily in everyone exciting a fight or flight response. It could even impair a fight or flight response. Like if you think of like some drunk dude wandering in the woods,
right?
He sees a bear.
He's like, "Hey,
hi.
Buddy!
Hi, bear!
Hey, buddy!" Yeah, you're
so
totally
cute.
Right.
That
totally.
Is not a fight or flight,
right?
But what I took away as the benefit that you just said was you should have a couple of drinks before you work out.
Mm-hmm. That's the takeaway. That's the takeaway that can
exactly
pull from that.
So we have it on.
Okay, so let's come back to some of this in a little bit too, because we have a couple questions that really hit on that. But let's go on to next.
Next Rick question.
Next Rick question.
All right, Rick. How and why does it affect the brain?
So I think there's a lot of things to look at with this. And one of the things is about the ethanol and its effect on neurotransmitters. Because that's kind of how, let's read his next question too, so we can talk about both these things.
Okay. What is drunkenness actually caused by, and why does it affect some people more than others?
So the thing with ethanol is that the molecules are small, so they can, get into the brain cells easily and interfere with the neurotransmitters that enable the brain to send the signals, for activities to happen. And one of those, is glutamate. That it has the ability to kind of block glutamate's ability to send those signals so that everything can function correctly. And another thing that it does is it can excite GABA, which is that gamma aminobutyrate acid thing, Will. And so not only does the blocking of the glutamate restrict the brain's ability to react to circumstances or stimuli and have those signals travel much slower, but the GABA kind of slows things down even further because it's kind of this relaxing situation. So that's why we get to where we really slur when we talk and we're stumbling and it's like the brain is telling the body what to do 4 or 5 seconds later. Mm-hmm. And that's because of the ethanol's ability to block what's going on with all of those neurotransmitters. And that's when we were just talking about the alcohol poisoning, you know, that in that excessive drinking episode, it can depress the brain function so much that it doesn't even send the really crucial body signals, like the person passes out and it doesn't send the signal of, oh, you should breathe.
Yeah. Our transduction pathways are interfered with and we stop making connections between like, oh, wait, I'm not good enough. I shouldn't talk to that person.
Right, yeah. Or I can dance really well, I bet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. We forget that we can't dance. We forget or we're not good singers.
Liquid
so that
courage.
You know, that can sometimes be fun, but it is kind of a problem when it interferes with vital organ and respiratory function. Yeah.
So that's kind of what causes the actual drunkenness. But as far as the brain, one thing that can be, especially when we look at alcoholics, and it seems that about 80% of alcoholics create a thiamine deficiency, which is a vitamin B1. And it appears that this has the ability to damage the cerebellum, which is responsible for coordinating a lot of the movement and even some of our forms and ability to learn things. So in order to understand these effects, sometimes it's good to look at the extreme side. And the extreme side of these thiamine deficiencies is this Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome thing where it kind of has the ability to cause a lot of mental confusion for a person, almost like they're dealing with Alzheimer's kind of thing. And it can cause paralysis in the nerves that allow the eyes to move. These are the people that just simple things, like they could be in the studio with us and they wouldn't be able to figure out how to leave. Like they don't they can't figure out that that's the door and that's where I go out. And so when we look at these extreme situations of alcoholics over years, we can think about, okay, what happens just when we're drinking some and what would cause the B1 deficiency? And, you know, you hear a lot about different types of alcohols causing destruction to the beneficial bacteria, and a lot of those bacteria make a lot of our B vitamins. I wonder if that is something that's having an effect on that.
Yeah, and it can be like the substrates that our body uses to process different fuels get used up as we process those fuels, which is kind of like bringing back to like Ray Peet's talking about glucose metabolism, and they were first doing studies on unsaturated fats' impacts on metabolism. And they found that these rats that weren't fed unsaturated fats had really, really fast metabolisms. So they burned through all the glucose that they were fed, and they developed vitamin B deficiencies because they kept using vitamin B's complexes, especially B1, at a faster rate than the other rats that were fed unsaturated fats. And those other rats that had the unsaturated fats were getting fatter. They weren't able to process the glucose as quickly, so they get higher cholesterol and all these other problems that come along with that. But they weren't using up their B vitamins as quickly because their metabolism was slower.
That's interesting. So someone who drinks a lot is really turning into basically a sugar burner.
Yeah, and you're using up B vitamins in the process, as well as other cofactors of glycolysis and cellular respiration, including B vitamins and chromium and stuff.
That's very interesting. Okay, I think that we...
I passed out. Sorry.
Yeah, you were a little bit drunk. I think that we're going to have to do one more question, and then we're going to have to finish up the rest of these questions next week. Do you have anything that you wanted to talk about, Ken?
I'm wondering if I have a problem, but
Oh, okay, cool.
It's not a problem if you're still functioning. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. Anu, Mysore Kamataka, please elaborate on the ill effects of alcohol on the physical and mental health, combined with heavy smoking, of course.
Sure. I mean, why wouldn't you smoke it up?
Yeah, if you're going to drink, you're going to smoke.
I love how he added, of course. Of course you'd smoke a lot.
Okay. I think it goes back to, especially when we talked about the effects on the liver that drinking can have. Keep in mind that it's not just those effects that are causing a problem for the liver. It's occupying the liver so that the liver can't do some of the other things that it's supposed to do, like remove toxins and filth. And if a liver is damaged, overwhelmed, beat up, whatever, it's not going to perform as well. It's not going to be able to maybe make cholesterol as well. All those things that we really need to function, repair, rebuild, its ability to remove toxins, those are all become hampered now. So any number of problems can be elevated. And then when you add smoking to that, well, now you stink. So you have all those problems and you stink.
Well, yeah. I mean, so that's and you're a smoker. And no one wants to date you. Like that's the biggest problem. So you're all drunk and you want to date everyone, but because you're a smoker, no one wants to date you. So yeah.
So we're really getting into the science of this.
It's the worst. It's like Shakespeare talked about alcohol. It strengthens the will but weakens the flesh. Need to that.
But yeah, why does alcohol make you want it? Because I can go for months without thinking about a cigarette. But the night that I like tie one on,
you
I'm like,
smoke them all.
I'm asking homeless people, you got one on you? You know.
Well, I think it's again because of the vasodilating effects of alcohol.
It's that and the other part too. Remember that alcohol is a diuretic, and if you listen to our quit smoking episode, we talk a lot about how to help that happen. Most people need to raise their blood pressure, thicken their blood, or dilate their system a little bit so that the blood pressure is a little bit higher, just because the system is more constricted. So if you're drinking and you're not only vasoconstricting the system, which is going to lower the blood pressure, you're peeing out minerals, which is going to lower the blood pressure, then that's going to bring on the craving for smoking, because that'll turn that around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Will.
I don't know if you were saying the words backwards or not, but yeah, when you drink alcohol, it causes vasodilation, so your circulatory system gets more open, so your blood volume has more space to be in, which means there's lower blood pressure, and like as you added, you're peeing out more and more hydration because it's a diuretic. So then smoking helps reverse that by causing vasoconstriction. Yeah, so your blood pressure
goes. Did I say that wrong? I had it backwards or something?
Yeah,
so either of those things could cause the problem, minerals going out, or the vascular system opening up more. Either of those could cause the problem, but drinking can cause both of those problems. So you have double whammy. Hmm. And then smoking can reverse both of those problems. Not because smoking is beneficial, because it's causing a constriction, which for many people is a real problem.
What I'm hearing, though, is a cancellation. It's a canceling out.
It's cancellation.
It's doing it with toxins, though.
On one level, it's a cancellation effect. So yes, Kenna, but
you're not lifting your mineral levels. You're using toxins instead of minerals thicken the blood.
But the horrible problem about that is like, so you're balancing out your blood pressure, and so your body's like, okay, cool. I'm not as likely to get a seizure right now, so that's cool. But like alcohol, you know how it makes you like red in the face and that kind of thing. Like that sort of flushing occurs when our cells are not able to perform their normal metabolic functions. And blood, like when a muscle fatigues, it gets all like full of blood and inflamed. That's what's happening to like the skin level. Your body's trying, the blood is not effectively providing energy to the tissues. So that's happening because the alcohol is interfering with all the regular synaptic work and signal transduction pathways that are supposed to be happening. So your cells are already impaired in their functionality. And then you smoke, and every molecule of carbon monoxide that you inhale when you smoke binds with hemoglobin in your blood and makes it less capable of transferring oxygen or circulating carbon dioxide. And that's how you die from carbon monoxide poisoning, is it inhibits your hemoglobin in your blood from picking up oxygen or releasing it or circulating CO2, so you can have asphyxiation. So now, like, if you've got alcohol and carbon monoxide, you have energy depleted impaired cells from the alcohol, and then blood that can't even give those already depleted cells, they can't even give them oxygen anymore. So it's a problem.
Right. So let's pick up on that next week. I want to talk more about the red blood cells and why we get bloodshot eyes, all that kind of stuff. Rick has a question about that. So we're going to have to cover that next week because we talk too much. Are we going to be drunk again next week?
Let's keep the party going. Okay.
All right, great.
If you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com. I forgot to do all this earlier, but hey. And I have one little thing else to say. Here we go. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com. Is that still the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Or head on over to Will's page, mybodyofknowledge.net. He's got lots of great exercises on there, pain relief exercises, and lots of great blogs, information, and all that jazz.
Cool. So we'll see you next week.
I won't remember this because I'm in a blackout, but cool. See you then.